Holding on Vava Mud Aleph, the fourth line from the top. We started discussing yesterday the question, are you allowed to do the first Ve'ilah? Chasson Palav just gotten married, he's marrying a B'sula. Are you allowed to do the first Ve'ilah on Shabbos? We had a B'raisa before on Gimel Amud Beis that said no, but the Gemara is reopening the question over here, either because the Amoraim not necessarily had they heard of that B'raisa, we don't expect the Amoraim to be familiar with all the B'raisas, or they weren't sure if the Halachas like it. And we brought up the various possibilities about should it be usur or should it be mutter. On the one hand, you're making a womb. On the other hand, are you? Is it more along the lines of that the blood is like inside a container over there, and you're just opening the container? Is it a matter of davar sheni miskaven? If you're making an opening there in the woman's body, but are you intending for that, or is that an unintentional side effect? Is it misakin? Is it that you're improving things? Because now it's easier to do a bi'ilah afterwards. There is a metalkal because a b'sula gets more of a k'suba than a ba'ula, etc. Then we mentioned also the question of Rabbi Yehuda versus Rabbi Shimon, where in particular there's two machloikas in Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon that bear on this issue. One is an issue that we had quite a lot of times in Shabbos and sporadically since then, about the question of davar sheni miskaven. If you're doing something which unintentionally causes, and we're not necessarily talking sikresha, we'll talk about that soon, but action A unintentionally causes action B, which is a malacha, is that also or not? Rabbi Yehuda holds yes, Rabbi Shimon holds no. And the second machlokes of theirs is that in general we say that malachas on Shabbos are only also daraisa if they're misakin, if you're improving something thereby, even the malachas that in and of themselves involve destroying something, like for example the malacha of ripping threads or tearing out stitches or burning or whatever, for the most part those are usually al manas misakin. You're burning something because you need the ashes. You're tearing out the stitches because you want to re-sew it properly, etc. Whereas Reb Shimon holds that there's two specific malachas, choyvel and mavir, choyvel making a wound, and mavir making a fire, where you're chayev for them even if you're mekalkel, even if you're doing them only destructively. So we could argue over here. We could say you're making a wound. And if the halacha is like Reb Shimon, then you'd be chayev on those grounds. You may be mekalkel, you may be damaging because she would have been better off without it. But on the other hand, according to Reb Shimon, such a thing would be chayev. So we said there were two versions. The last thing we said in the Gemara is that there were actually two versions of what the Amoraim held on that. We said it was machloikas Rav and Shmuel. It's machloikas in that itself, between two different places in Bavel, what each one held. In the yeshiva of Rav, they held that Rav holds that it's mutter and Shmuel holds it's aser. And in Nahauta, which is the city where Shmuel had his yeshiva, they said the other way around. So now comes the question. For Rav Shari, you're telling me that Rav holds according to the version in Bei Rav, the fourth line of Vava Marala. For Rav Shari, you're telling me that Rav holds that it is mutter to do such a thing on Shabbos, which would mean on the face of it that he holds davar sheni miskaven is mutter, that here you are making a Pesach, you are making an opening, which we'll learn later at the bottom of Vavam Beis, is a malacha, it's either boina, or according to Rashi it's boina, according to the Rambam it's makabah patish. But since it's ainim eskaven, Rav is saying it's mutter because you didn't intend for that to happen. And we'll see soon that it's not necessarily psikreish. Actually, that's going to be the Gemara's answer, so let's not get ahead of ourselves. So how could Rav say that it's mutter? Well, Amr Reb Shimi bar Chizki m'shmei de Rav. But we see that Reb Shimi bar Chizki is said in the name of Rav. Haim sukaria din zaisa, the plug, the cloth. So Rashi says it's a cloth plug. That you stick into the hole in a barrel. You have a barrel. In those days, barrels were made out of clay, out of earthenware. You punch a hole in the side so that you could insert, so you could get out the wine. You insert something like a faucet in there. Afterwards, you need to stuff the hole closed. A very common thing. They'd take a rag and stuff it into the hole. The problem is on Shabbos or on Yom Tov, also lahaduka b'yematava. You're not allowed to stuff it into the hole on Yom Tov or on Shabbos. So Rashi says the reason is because of schita, because the problem is you're going to be squeezing out the liquid that's in the rag. Tosfos has a very long... Yes. First of us has a very long discussion about all the pros and cons of it. Why should it be also because of schita on the face of it is a problem of libun, of laundering, and here maybe it's not an issue because what does the barrel contain? The barrel contains wine. And when you make a cloth wet or you squeeze it out or whatever of wine or other non-water liquids, that's not an issue of cleaning it because it's already dirty. So maybe that shouldn't be an issue. Is it an issue maybe Tosfos discusses that it's related to dosh, to threshing? But that you could argue, Rabbeinu Tam points out in Tosfos, that you could argue, yes, if you need the liquid, if you're going to be using the liquid that gets squeezed out of the cloth. Here you're not. It's just you're throwing a waste. So Tosfos goes back and forth. They also bring in what the Aruch says on this. The Aruch brings a couple of explanations on this. One is that indeed it's a matter of sitta, and that's the thing that Tosfos is discussing. The other explanation the Aruch says is it's not a question of squeezing at all, but rather it's a matter. We're not talking about a cloth plug over here. We're talking the second explanation of the Aruch is we're talking about a wooden plug, and there the problem is you may end up leaving it in the hole, and therefore you're making a keli. And that would be the answer of making a keli. And Tosfos has a problem with that also. So there's a lot of back and forth on all of this. And there's also in particular one thing that comes out of this whole discussion. The Aruch holds. We're going to talk about Pesik Reisha. That this is also because Pesik Reisha. Because inevitably, when you're doing whatever it is, when you're putting in the plug or whatever it is, you're inevitably going to squeeze something out of it. The Aruch. Seems to hold that if it's a Pesik Reisha deloy nichale, then it's okay. Pesik Reisha deloy nichale, meaning yes, it's inevitable that it's going to happen, and therefore it should be also, but it's not something that you want to happen. And therefore he argues that it should be mutter, and that becomes a big issue in halacha, whether we say that a Pesik Reisha deloy nichale. Because deloy nichale, not so much you don't want it to happen, but you would rather it hadn't happened, let's put it that way. That's part of what Tosfos asked. If you're talking about that you put it in there, and then you decided to leave it in there, then it's not Pesik Reisha to begin with. When you put it in there, it was mutter. Yeah. Anyway, so the point is, Rav is saying whatever the exact scenario is over here, you have an issue where it's davar shein miskaven. You're not intending for wine or whatever it is to be squeezed out of the plug, or you're not intending maybe to begin with to leave it in the keli. And yet Rav is saying it's also. So by the same logic over here, even if making this pesach that we're talking about with the first beila is davar shein miskaven, it should be also according to Rav. The answer is Bahu Afilu Reb Shimon Moide. No, that's different. In that case of the plug, even Reb Shimon would agree it's also. Because both Abaya and Rabbi say that Reb Shimon, even though he holds Dov Hashem Miskaven as Mutter, like in the case of dragging the bench, but he does agree if it's Pesik Reisha, if it's inevitable. Pesik Reisha is a classic example. You know, I want a bird's head for my son to play with as a toy, or the Rabbi Hanan's example is slightly different, that I want an animal head to feed to my dog or whatever, so I'm going to chop it off. I don't care whether the animal or the bird dies or not, but of course it's going to. That's Pesik Reisha. You cut off the head, of course it's going to die. And even according to Reb Shimon, for sure according to Reb Yehuda, there's no question, but even according to Reb Shimon, it's also. Whereas in our case over here of the Be'ila, as we're going to get to more on Amud Beis, not necessarily are you going to be creating that Pesach.
Reisha.
Well, that's what we're saying. It's not a Pesik Reisha. We'll get back to that. Okay, another question. But we find that Rav Chiya Ba'ashi says in the name of Rav explicitly that Ba'alocha is like Rav Yehuda, but Rav Chanan Ba'ami Amar Shmuel Alocha Kerav Shimon, and on the other hand, Rav Chanan Ba'ami says in the name of Shmuel that Alocha is like Rav Shimon, which so far, that agrees better with the version that they had in the Haudah, that Rav said the first Be'ila is also, presumably because of Dov Hashem Miskaven, whereas Rav Shimon, whereas Shmuel held that it's Mutter, presumably because it holds like Rav Shimon. And the Gemara points out, by the way, Rav Chiya Ba'avin Masni Lobaloi Gavri, Rav Chiya Ba'avin learned the same discussion, but without mentioning the names of the respective Talmidim, who said in the names of Rav and Shmuel. In other words, he just had his the way he had heard it was just directly from Rav and Shmuel themselves, without the second generation involved, that Rav Amar Alocha Kerav Yehuda, or Shmuel Amar Alocha Kerav Shimon. So you're back to the question, how did they get the idea that Rav is the one who said it's Mutter to do the Be'ilu Rishayna, and Shmuel is the one who said it's also, which is exactly the opposite of their opinions over here. The answer is, well, Olam Rav could be Hoda Svirla. You could say that Rav holds the Kribi Hoda. So why, according to him, would the Be'ila Rishona be Mutter? Because it depends. Because we said there's more than one factor involved over here. There's not just a matter of Java Shem is Gavin. There's a lot of different factors involved. We mentioned yesterday, the Gemara had mentioned yesterday, there's two ways of going through the whole discussion, of going through all of the different details that lead to should it be also or should it be mutter. We started with the question, first of all, is the blood considered to be just a mifkad pocket, that it's sitting there as though like in a container, it's not fully absorbed into their flesh over there, or is it chaburi michbar that it comes out via chabura, via a wound? But then we brought a number of other factors that you could say if it's mifkad pocket and therefore there's not an issue of making a wound, but what about the Pesach? Then we get into Rabbi Shimon versus Rabbi Yehuda, etc. And then we had a different version of it that we could say you could start with the assumption that the blood is chiburim michbar, that you do need a chabura, you do need a wound in order for the blood to come out. But then the question becomes, are you doing it because a wound, when are you chayev, according to Rabbi Yehuda, for making a wound on Shabbos, only if you're doing it for a constructive purpose, because you need the blood, as opposed to makalka b'chabura, Rabbi Yehuda would hold his potter. And we went back and forth on that a little bit. Whereas Reb Shimon would hold Mekalka b'chabura as chayev. So, l'hach l'shna d'amad dam nifkad pocket, according to the first version of the discussion before on Hayom and Beis, that we said that we started with the assumption that the blood is sitting there, it's collected over there, it's not absorbed into the flesh, well then, Mekalka lo etzel ha-pesach. You can argue that Rav would say, Rav does hold, according to Rabbi Yehuda, that Dabashen Miskavin is also, but he would argue in this case, you're not doing a malacha at all, you're doing a makalkal, you're doing something destructive by creating this Pesach, therefore it should be fine. And lahach lishna dam adam chiburim michbar, and according to the second version of the Gemara that we said, or the discussion before, that we said that maybe the blood is actually absorbed into the flesh over there, and taking it out requires a chabura, requires making a wound. You could argue again that why would Rav say that it's mutter? Mekalka b'chabura, same idea. By making this wound, you're doing something destructive.
And what about psikresha?
Psikresha we'll get to later on. That's not necessarily psikresha because of an issue called hatoya. We'll get to that. But right now we don't even need that yet. Right at this stage of the Gemara, we don't even need that yet. According to Rav, it doesn't really matter whether it's psikresha or not. Either way, you're doing something destructive. You're not doing a malacha which is constructive. You're not making a constructive Pesach or a constructive Chabura, which according to Rabbi Yehuda would be the only way you'd be chayev. Again, according to Rabbi Shimon, there's various arguments you could make. You could talk about whether it's Dov Hashem Miskaven, but then you have to deal with the issue. Then you have to deal with the issue of Sikresha, which we'll get to later. Or you could say, and again, according to Reb Shimon, if you say it's a matter of making a Pesach, fine. You could argue it's Makalkal, and when it comes to Binyan, he agrees that a Binyan or Makav Patish or whatever, which is really Makalkal, which is really destructive, would be Potter. But he holds that by Chabura it would be Chayiv. So if you take the second version of the Gemara from yesterday, that the issue over here is making a Chabura, that the blood it only comes out via Chabura, via a wound, then according to Reb Shimon, you would in fact be chayev. You would in fact be also because mekalka b'chabura, he holds mekalka b'chabura as chayev, and yeah, on the face of it, so far it would be psikresha. So we'll get back to that later on the base.
But on the other hand, you destroy something to do for who, so it's not really destruction.
Right, but it's all the question
of do for who without destroying.
True. But right now, one way of looking at it is we can argue in the short term, it's Mekalkal. Yeah, in the longer term maybe it's constructive, fine. But that's after Shabbos already.
Fairly.
Fact is, your Peru Ru is not going to take place right there on Shabbos. It takes 9 months.
Well.
Yeah. Most of Rav Chista. Rav Chista says, I have a contradiction to this whole idea that you want to argue that you're not allowed to do Be'ila on Friday night. The Braisa that we had before, we had the various opinions here, whether Rav or Shmuel says it's the one that's also. But a Mishnah says like this in Nida. Tinokas Shlegias Manaliros, if you have a girl who has not yet reached the age of having periods, which Rashi explains, the Gemara explains them, she agiu yemei urim, when she becomes a naira, bas mitzvah, basically puberty. So if she gets married before that, venises, if she gets married, the point that the Mishnah is discussing there is as follows. You have relations with a psula the first time, there's going to be bleeding. Later on, throughout their married life, and if she bleeds, it's not going to be dam psulim, though, it's going to be dam nida. And they're going to have to separate. There's various halachas involved, actually, if there's roya dam machmas tashmish, which gets into a whole complicated thing itself. But anyway, the question is basically, at what point do we know that the dam psulim has stopped, that the psulim have healed, and now any blood thereafter can be assumed to be dam nida? But how do we know? That's what the mission is discussing. It's not the same blood, but how would you tell? How would you tell? Well, actually there is. There's a braisa quoted in Masechta Nida, and actually it's the very last extant line of the Yerushalmi of Nida that mentions that there are certain subtle differences between Dab Sula and Dam Nida. They actually look a little, the color of them is a little bit different. Okay, but whatever it is, the fact of the matter is, though, nowadays we don't necessarily have the expertise to be able to tell them apart. And in fact, nowadays the halacha is, the Gemara already mentions this, that once you do the be'ilah mitzvah, once you do the first be'ilah on the wedding night or whichever of the nights afterwards, as we'll discuss, then that's it. You have to separate until she's considered fully nida and has to go to the mikveh. We don't know. The only thing is, we do actually, in order to demonstrate that there is a certain difference between dam psulim and dam nida, we do make in halacha. We learn this in chasm classes. There's two particular details in the halachas and in the halachas of nida that we change in the case of dam psulim. One is that normally you have to wait 5 days before she can start counting shiva nikim, and here you only have to wait 4 days. And the other is that during the days of nida and of shiva nikim, the husband can't sit on his wife's bed whether she's around or not. But during the days after dam b'sulim, he can sit on her bed when she's not around. Those are the two kulos. But other than that, we treat it as if it was the same as dam nida. Anyway, but here we're talking before all these takanas, when the ikra din still existed, that the people had the expertise to know what's dam psulim and what's dam nida, and therefore you don't have to separate after that. So, at what point, though, do we know that dam psulim has stopped and dam nida is starting? So here, the first case is then a girl who's not even of age to be nida yet. So Bishamai says, you give her 4 nights. Any blood that comes during those 4 nights, we assume is dam psulim. But Hillel says that she has even longer than that, maybe, until the wound heals, which Rashi explains over here briefly, that it just means as long as every time they have tashmish, she bleeds, then we assume it's still from the basulim. And Gemara goes in and Nida goes into more details over there, how we know. But anyway, that's for our purposes, that's not Nageya.
How do they collect the blood?
Collecting the blood, we'll talk about on Ahmed Bey's. Actually, they would put a cloth under them, but wait. We'll get back to that. That was case number one. Case number two is if she's of age to start having periods. She's already bas mitzvah, but she hasn't actually begun having any yet. And then she got married. Then Beth Shammai says all she has is the first night. Any time after the first night, we have to assume already that it's already dam nida. Or Vesilo says she has until Motzei Shabbos, namely 4 nights. If she gets married, we said in our Mishnah that she gets married on Wednesday. So Wednesday night, Thursday night, Friday night, and Motzei Shabbos. Anytime during that time, the soul says you can assume that it's still dam psulim. 4 nights. Now, anytime during those 4 nights, we assume that it's still left over for dam psulim. Now, that's the thing. The first assumption, the Gemara, is that it doesn't mean actually that they had relations all those 4 nights. My lab to Eli Baal Motzei Boil. On the face of it, what does the Mishnah mean? It means that any dam that comes out during those first 4 nights, meaning, in other words, we would assume like this. The Gemara is assuming at this point like this. If he did a complete Be'ilah, then there's no reason that afterwards there should be any more bleeding from Basulim. There's no reason that it should be 4 nights. What do we mean over here? Why would there be 4 nights? Because he didn't do Be'ilah, or maybe he did an incomplete Be'ilah. So then, we're saying, to Eli Baal, Motzei Boil. On the face of it, then, we're saying, even if he did not do Be'ilah, any of those, so he didn't do Wednesday night, he didn't do Thursday night, we allow him to any of the 4 nights, including Friday night. So there you go. You're allowed to do the first full Be'ilah on Friday night. Well, that's the question over here. We're assuming so far, we're discussing the question whether you can do Be'ilah Friday night the first time, and here we see Befedersh from this Mishnah. According to Beis Hillel, you can. Even Beis Shammai is not necessarily disagreeing with the concept. They're just saying you don't consider a Dam Sulim at that point. But
in case you don't stop.
No, but it's still the same thing. When we're talking about over here about all this problem with the Dam and the Chabura and this and that and whatever, it's the same difference. So Rava says, not necessarily. It may mean you have four nights, but it means excluding Motzei Shabbos. So actually, of those four nights, there's only three when you could actually be having relations. And Tosfos actually points out on Amud Aleph that actually when the Gemara explains there in Nida that the 4 days we're talking about doesn't necessarily mean four consecutive days anyway. According to Beis Hillel, it actually means four times. Yeah, I mean, if it happens that after the first time, you know, it's 3 weeks before they do it again, then fine, that's considered the second night.
Times in one night.
No. All the times in one night definitely count as one time. Even Beis Shammai agrees to that. Yeah. Amar Rava. Oh yes. Amar Rava. Loy labayim Shabbos. No, maybe it means exclusive of Shabbos. Amar Yapayavad of a hard Motzei Shabbos abal loy leskatani. Why the price? The Mishnah clearly says 4 nights until Motzei Shabbos. She gets married on Wednesday. Then the only way you have 4 nights is Wednesday night, Thursday night, Friday night, Motzei Shabbos. So no, Rava says, we were assuming a minute ago that it meant he didn't actually do Be'ilah yet, and we're saying, therefore, it shows that you can do the first Be'ilah Friday night. No, it means he did the Be'ilah on Wednesday night, like he was supposed to. He's doing it again Thursday night, he's doing it again Friday night, and again Motzei Shabbos, and all those nights they're still bleeding. And Basil is assuming that since she had never yet been Nida, then we assume that any time during those 4 nights, it's still Dam Basilim.
How did you assume that she's not being Nida?
That's Basil's assumption. She's never yet established a pattern of becoming Nida at all, or not even a pattern. She's old enough to be having periods, but she didn't actually have any yet. Then therefore, Basil says up to 4 nights you can assume that it's Dam Basilim. After that, you can assume already Chos Amaka.
Not that it cannot happen,
but Basil is being makel and saying that up until 4 nights, we can assume that there's no reason to assume that her Nidus Davka came during those 4 days. Question is, Ikishabal Maikum Ashmalon, or if he did Be'ilah on Wednesday night already, then what's the Chiddush? Then what does the Mishnah need to add the words Ad Motzei Shabbos? Say, you give her 4 nights. We ourselves know from our mission of Basulim Yisasli Amirbi, automatically, the 4 nights are over Motzei Shabbos. Obviously, for mentioning until Motzei Shabbos, the implication is that the Mishnah is telling us you're allowed to do Be'ilah Friday night. So if you already did it Wednesday night the first time, what's the Chiddush? The answer is Kamash Malon, the Shari Lim Bivol Shabbos. That's just it. The Mishnah is actually telling us the Chiddush. That Bechlau, you're allowed to do Be'ilah on Shabbos. Even though...
But when did she start?
What?
They
started Wednesday night. What we're saying is like this. Even though come Friday night, not necessarily have all the Basulim been removed yet.
Yeah.
There still may be as they're doing via, there may be more Basulim that more of those shreds of skin that come out and more bleeding. Nevertheless it's mutter. You're allowed to enter through a narrow gap, like in a stone wall. Even though you're knocking off little pebbles and little pieces of rock from the sides of it.
What's the reason?
The reason is, so Rashi says that it's a matter of suffix. The Rivosh has a tshuva on this. The Rivosh, one of the early Achronim from Spain, has a tshuva on this, where he explains that it's a matter of when you're going through that gap, it's davar sheni miskaven, and it's not psik resha. You may knock off the pebbles from the sides, you may not. Same thing over here. You might cause a wound and bleeding. You might not. Therefore, it's fine. But that's the chiddush of the Mishnah, that yes, that very fact, that it's fine.
So
the Mishnah is informing us, so the Mishnah, in other words, is not necessarily telling us whether you're allowed to do the first Be'ilah Friday night. The first Be'ilah, you could argue, maybe is Osir. So it's no contradiction to Rav or Shmuel as the case may be. You could argue the first Be'ilah is indeed Mutter, because then necessarily you're going to be making a Chabura, and you're going to be making a Pesach, etc., etc. But if you already did the first Be'ila a couple of nights earlier, and now it's just a continuation, then the Mishnah is saying it's no problem, because then, you may or may not cause further bleeding. Incidentally, by the way, the Ibn Ezra, I think, brings that the Karoyim in his time, and maybe the Tzedukim from before that, I don't know, held that you're b'chlal not allowed to have relations on Shabbos. They explain that the pasuk in this week's parsha, or in this week's parasha, in Kisisa, I forget, b'chorish v'katzu tishbo, so you have to rest from plowing and planting on Shabbos. They understood that as a euphemism for having relations. We find that elsewhere in Tanakh that relations are relations between husband and wife are described as plowing, lulikarashtem beglossi, planting, as in planting a baby, and so they held that the pasuk is implying that that's also on Shabbos.
Really?
Yeah, so that we see from this that not. Most of Rabbi Yosef. So Rabbi Yosef says have another contradiction to this whole business. That you want to say that you want to say that you can't have relations Friday night. You want to say Rav or Shmuel, as the case may be, said you can't do the first time. But a Mishnah in Bracha says Chosin Potter Kriyas Shema Laila Rishon on Matzoy Shabbos. The Chosin is Potter from Kriyas Shema the first night he gets married, and all the way until Matzah Shabbos. Im Loi Osam Maisa, if he has not yet had relations. Now, what would be the reason? My love, Mishum de Tori, the Boy Lemuval. On the face of it, the reason why he's potter is because he's not going to be able to have kavana. He's distracted because he has to still have relations. And what are we saying, in other words? So it's a matter of Rashi says, Osik b'mitzvah, potter mena mitzvah. Or no, so Rashi says, so it's not a matter of distraction. It's not a matter of that he can't be mechaben. At this point in the discussion, Rashi says, the vort is, we're thinking it's Osik b'mitzvah, potter mena mitzvah. So he's involved in the mitzvah of Bria, which will lead to Peruvu. Therefore, he's potter from a mitzvah. And what's the point? We're saying that he's potter each of those nights. He's potter from Krishna each of those nights. Now, again, he's potter Wednesday night because he might be doing Be'ilah then. But if he didn't do it then he's still potter Thursday night and still potter Friday night, etc. And that should show. And that should show that Friday night he's motor to do it. Not necessarily. You could say that it's not that he's distracted with the mitzvah. He's having tsar each of these nights. Maybe we can assume maybe that he is, and therefore we pater him because he's not yet had be'ilah. So he tried Wednesday night and he wasn't able to for whatever reason. He tried Thursday night and he wasn't able to. Friday night we don't allow him to, according to this assumption. But the Shabbos, Zaiter, that's the last time already. And after that already, we say, the Rambam's expression about it is that after that, he's already gospel, he's already more comfortable around her. Actually, the Rambam's explanation of this tirda over here is a little bit different. The Rambam's explanation of it is he may not find that she's a psula, and therefore he's distracted because of that. That's what we're talking about, Krishma, yeah. There's various other mafoshim also. There's a somebody else, one of the Rishonim, I don't remember who, says the vote is he's worried about the fact that when they have bia, something may go wrong and he'll become kruel shracha or get wounded in the action. So according to some of them, that's the vote. Anyway. So Abaya is saying at this point that no, the tirda is faket, that he's bothered by the fact that he's not yet been able to do bia. And Friday night he can't. So that there's no proof from that that he would have been allowed to Friday night. Amalei Rava, so what? From Tirda Potter. So what? Why does Tirda, according to the original assumption, it's Osik B'mitzvah, then fine. But if you're saying it's just a matter of Tirda, that he's mentally distracted and therefore he can't be Mechaven, does that make him Potter? Elameata Tavis Finasa Bayam, by that logic, if his ship sank and he lost his whole fortune, Hachanami de Potter, you're going to tell me also he's Potter from Krishna? No, he has to get over it and be able to be mechaven. B'chitema hochinami, so you might answer, yes, maybe in that case he is potter. No, v'amar rab abba bazavda amar rab, ovol chaya b'chol ha-mitzvah sa'amuras b'torah, an ovol, and here we're not even talking, avelus is more of a mitzvah than mourning for your sunk ship. And even an ovel is chayev in all the mitzvahs, including krishma, chutz minat tefillin, except for tefillin, and that p'torah, by the way, is only on the first day. Shenema behen pe'er, because tefillin are called pe'er, they're a beautiful thing. So Rashi uses the expression that it's not appropriate that an ovel ma'olo ba'ofer kanei, his beauty, his strength is wallowing in the dust. So it's not appropriate that he should be putting on pe'er, the beautiful tefillin. So actually what it is as I understand, I've Baruch Hashem never had occasion to be involved with this, but as I understand it, the oval was potter from tefillin until after the burial.
Until
after the burial. And then if there's time after the burial, if there's still time in the day, then he puts on tefillin then.
But he's not potter of
Christmas. Right. So
that's the chatchila, but the eved,
No, but we're talking about. In other words, what the chassan was saying, the chassan is allowed to say Krishna. We learned in brachos over there that Ram Gamliel did say Krishna the first night he got married, and the talmidim said, "How come? Aren't you potter?" And he said, "I don't want to break off Ol Malchus Shemayim for even a moment." And at the end of the parak, there was a machloekus between him and the chachamim whether a chassan is allowed to voluntarily do it. Incidentally, by the way, now the halacha is the other way around. Nowadays, it says in Shulchan Aruch, practically speaking, can anybody really say they're mechaven so carefully in davening and in Krishna anyway? If a person were to say, you know what, I'm a chassan, I'm distracted, I'm osik mitzvah, I'm distracted, or whatever it is, and therefore I can't concentrate, that would be mechzi kiyur, or like, what are you making yourself such a big guy, like normally the rest of the time you are mechaven? So now the halacha, nawadays the halacha is not a chassan, is not potter. But anyway, getting back to our Gemara over here. So, yes, even an oval is expected to set aside his avelus, to set aside his tirda, long enough to say Krishna. So how much more so somebody whose ship sank? And therefore, you want to argue over here he's tortured because he's bothered by not having done Be'ilah yet. So what? Why does that pater him? Elo amar Rabba Tanoihi. So no, Rabba says actually it's a machloikas Tanoihim. This whole business about whether you're allowed to do the first beer Friday night is actually we can relate it to a machlokes tanoim, and therefore we can say that so that mishnah from Brachos is no contradiction to Rav, because yes, you could say that mishnah goes according to the one opinion, Rav goes according to the other. The Tanakh, it's a machlokes tanoim, and Rav is entitled to, and Rav and Shmuel are entitled to pick sides. The Tanakh Chodah, because one Braita says, Im lo asa maisa berushin, potter af b'sheni. One Braita says, if he did not do the first Be'ilah on the first night, then he's potter the second night. B'sheni, potter af b'shlishi. If he doesn't do it the second night, he's potter the third night. Now, the third night is going to be Friday night. Wednesday night, Thursday night, Friday night. V'tanya idach, and then a different Braita says, Rishin b'sheni potter shlishi chayev. The first and second night he's potter, the third night he's chayev. Now, why would he be chayev? Rav is saying, because this Braisa would hold, he's not allowed to do the Be'ilah on Shabbos. So Rav is still sticking to his position that only when he's Osik Mitzvah would he be Potter, not a matter of Tirda, but rather Osik Mitzvah. So Friday night, according to the second Braisa, he can't be Osik Mitzvah anyway, so therefore, whether he's done the Be'ilah yet or not, he's Potter, he's Chayev in Krishna. And now the question is Abaya. So how would Abaya answer the contradiction between these two braises? He would say Hasam Nami B'Tirja Plagi. He would say that actually the machloikas between these two braises is on this matter of Tirja. He would argue basically how long does the tour of Tirja last? Do we say that he's tortured for the first two nights, and maybe the third night, you know, forget about your tirda, just say Krishna already? Or do we say that even the third night he's still tortured? And Rashi points out the difference is Abaya would say like this: here the tirda is of doing; he has tsar over the fact that he can't do a mitzvah. In the case of an ovel has the prava avelus, but the tsar itself is not really such a mitzvah. He has a mitzvah to actually act according to the rules of avelus. But that's more Mekorshim explained Rashi to mean that that's more in honor of the mess. He has the obligation therefore, but he doesn't have an obligation to actually feel tsar because of that. And therefore we tell him your tsar itself in and of itself is a rishus. Set it aside. Whereas here it's tsar but not being able to do a mitzvah. That's different. And the Gemara points out, "Bahani tanoi ki hani tanoi." Getting back to Rava's way of looking at it, that it's machlokas tanoim about whether you can do the first Be'ilah Friday night. These two tanoim are actually arguing the same argument as the following tanoim, the Tanya, because we have an explicit brisa. Hakonis is absula lo yivah b'tchila b'Shabbos. If somebody marries a psula, he's not allowed to do the first Be'ilah on Shabbos. V'chacham and matirin, but the chacham says it's mutter. So there you go, an explicit machlokas on this subject. Now man chachamim. So who would the chachamim be? Who are the chachamim who are matir? Amar Rabba Rav Shimoni, Dama Dava Sheni Miskaven Mutter. Back to what we said before, Dava Sheni Miskaven. Yeah. Amar Abaya Valmodir Rav Shimoni Psikresha Volyamus. And in this case, isn't it a Psikresha that you're going to be making a wound or making a Pesach or whatever, all the different, this is the first time we're talking about, yeah. Amalei, so Rava tells him, here's a detail we haven't mentioned until now. It's not, don't think that we're talking about like the Bavliim, who are not experts in Hatoya. Eliyesh Bekiin Bahatoya. Rather, there are people who are experts in Hatoya. Hatoya means, Hatoya, we'll discuss it more in a couple of days, but Rashi briefly says over here, Shematin Lestadim Ve'in Metziim Dam. They know how to do the Bia sort of at an angle so that it doesn't cause blood to come out. Physiologically, you know, I mean, the psulim is, I mean, it's a membrane over there that covers the thing, but it doesn't completely cover things up. So it is, I suppose, possible to sort of come in at an angle where you don't necessarily break them. I don't know. I'm not a gynecologist, but you know. So yes, you have people who know how to do hatoya. Therefore, it's not psikresha. Okay, in that case, he asks, Imkein Torud Lama. Well, then, what do we? Before we said he's Torud, what's the Tudor then? What's the distraction? Why is he part of Krishna? Yeah, the answer is L'Sha'ene Baki. The Tudor is we're talking about the Ene Baki, the one who does not know how to do Hatoya, is going to be Torud about whether he's going to do it right. Okay, Imkein. In that case, why don't we distinguish? And we say anyone who's baki in Atoya can do the first Beyond Shabbos. Anybody who is not, for them it's going to be a psikresha, is also. And the answer is roiv bakiyim. Hey, most people are baki. There's a lot of discussion about this among the Rishonim. Among one of them is the question: yeah, if we're talking about it, we're talking about a man who's getting married for the first time. How is he baki?
Right.
And there's a lot of other issues in it. The Rashba asks the question. According to this, it comes out nobody is tarud. It comes out then the baki is not tarud, and the ainid baki is not allowed to be on Shabbos anyway. So either way, neither one of them is tarud Friday night. So what's the problem? So a lot of different explanations that come in over here. One of them, the Shita Mekubetzes brings from the Radvaz, that really, yes, by rights at this stage of the discussion, there should be a difference between the Baki and the She'enid Baki, both as far as the Torah from Kriya Shema and as far as being allowed to do Be'ilah on Shabbos. But the Chachamim figured, Lotis Goy to do, as we learned in Yevamos, you don't make distinctions, you don't make different halachas for different groups of people. So we're matir be'ilah for everybody, and we pater Kriya Shema for everybody. Different achronim point out different problems with that.
Couldn't really single out those.
That one question is be'ilah takes place in private. Where what's the lotus going to do? So there's a lot of other explanations. One of them being that baki over here, we're not talking about whether a person knows how to do something as opposed to something else. It's really more a physiological matter. Does a person have the equipment, so to speak, to be able to do hatoya or not? We're saying most people do. And what was it when we say the Bavliim are not baki b'hatoya? One explanation of it that Mefoshim mentioned is that we mean not that Bavliim have a difference in the way they do beer than the Bnei Eretz Yisrael. The Bavliim do not know this concept that hatoya is different than non-hatoya. The Rabbi is pointing out to Abaya, you should know. You should know there is a difference by halacha. And since Roiv Bikiyin Haim, since most people do have the physical capability of doing hatoya, therefore that's good enough even for that, you can go according to the Roiv and assume that you're from that Roiv. You don't have to assume what? Yeah, okay, but well the discussion, yeah, okay. Both Rabbah and Abaye are from Babel. Okay, but it means the Babelim are not familiar with this concept. Rabbah himself, the Gemara mentions at the end of our Masechta, that Rabbah was advised by his brother to go learn in Eretz Yisrael about Rabbi Yochanan. There's various Gemaras that seem to imply that at one point he actually did that. So Rabbah may have picked up for in Eretz Yisrael certain pointers that, yeah, whereas Abaye lived his whole life in Babel. One more thing from this is that Tosfos points out. And the fact is la halacha, you are, as we'll learn tomorrow, the maskana of the Gemara, you are allowed to do the Be'ilu Rishona on Shabbos. There's no distinction between Baki and She'ene Baki. There's no distinction between Hatoya and not Hatoya. Why not? So based on this idea that most people are Baki in the sense that most people have the capability of doing it, so that itself is one thing. And then Tosfos points out the second factor, as just the opposite. As long as a person is not saying to himself specifically, I'm not going to do Hatoya, then there's a possibility, then there's a real possibility that he will. that not necessarily is he going to break the psulim and cause bleeding. And in that case, that those two factors taken together are enough to make it, according to Reb Shimon, that it would be mutter, because not psikresha. Well, based on all this logic, if you're saying the last thing we said is most people are able to do hatoya, meaning that not necessarily is there going to be bleeding anyway, shushvinin lama, mafa lama. Then why b'chlal do you have shushvinin, which we'll learn later in the perek, that they used to have two shushvinin, two attendants for the chas and akala. Their job was to be around there. I don't know if necessarily in the same room, but their job was basically to make sure that no foul play is involved. You don't want to have, after all, you don't want, for example, that they're going to do the bia. He's, you know, she's a psula. The next day he claims, you know what, she wasn't a psula. I didn't find any blood. So there was shushvinin and mapa lama, and they would put a cloth over there so that if there's any blood, the cloth will catch it. And that way they can make sure there's no trickery. But if we're saying over here that not necessarily is there bleeding anyway, then what do we need all that for? Yes, but there what we're talking about is it could after all be that no hatoya is done. It could be that regular be'ila is done in a way that does cause bleeding, but he might dafka go and hide the cloth and claim I didn't find any blood and therefore I have a tiny stolen. That's what the shushvinin and the makwa accomplish. But yes, if the point is, Rashi says, if he had done Hatoya, then if he comes with a tiny psulim, you know what, I didn't find any blood, she will counterclaim and based in, you know what, he didn't actually do a regular bia, I'm still a psula. And we'll learn later on, in a few days, the Gemara will mention, they had a test in those days for that kind of thing. Well, we'll get to it. We'll get to it on deaf hearing. Tosfos has a different explanation of this last line, that it's really continuing on the topic of Shabbos, that if on Shabbos necessarily you have to do Hatoya, why do you need shushvinin and a mapa on Shabbos? And again, the answer is because not necessarily. It might happen that according to Tosfos, as long as you didn't mean to do non-hatoya, then you're allowed to. So you may or may not do hatoya. If you did, then it's important to have if you did normal bia, then it's important, and broke the psulim, then it's important to have the shushvinin and the cloth there and as evidence. And the Gemara finishes off, Masiv Rav Ami, or not finishes off, but one more detail on this, Masiv Rav Ami, a Mishnah, in Adias says, Hamefis Mursa B'Shabbos, if somebody opens up a boil, an infection on the skin, on Shabbos, Im Lasis LaPechayev, and if you're doing it in order to make an opening for the wound, you want to drain out the pus, but also you want an opening there, Tosfos points out, because that way air will get into it and help heal it, then it's Aser. Chayev, Rashi says, because you're making an entrance, that's a Malacha of Boina, the Rambam holds rather it's Makav Patish, and that's how it's brought in Shulchan Aruch. Because you're completing something, you're making it usable. But if you're doing it only in order to get out the pus, then you're potter. So now, in this case, even if the purpose of the bia is to bring out the blood. Yes, we may say it's not chayev d'araisa, but it's still also d'rabanan. Why in this case are we allowing it? And the answer is hasam pakid v'akiv. In that case, the pus is all gathered in one place and it's removed from the surrounding flesh. It's in a glob over there. It's all ready to come out. So therefore, if you're only meaning to take out the lecha, then you're potter. Potter means pot. Sorry, I misread what Rashi is saying. In that case, with the mursa, usually we say in Hilchos Shabbos, potter means potter aval aser. You're potter from a chatos or whatever, but you're also to do it. Yeah. This is one of the three cases in Hilchos Shabbos where it's mutter, actually. So in that case, you're allowed to take out the pus. In that case, why in our case would we be saying that it's a matter of bringing out the blood, then it should be also, why should it be a difference? And the answer is because the pus is all gathered together in one glob and all ready to come out. It's while not embedded in the flesh at all. Here it's all gathered together more or less, but it's not completely removed from the surrounding tissues. It's still, as we said yesterday, from the samsei, it's sort of like liquid in a sponge. It's partly in and partly out. So therefore, there's more reason to argue that it should be ulcer. And the Gemara will continue with this discussion about first relations on Shabbos tomorrow, and we'll reach the maskana there. So now let's take. a few minutes and do our siyum on the previous Masechta. Masechta Yevamot that finished off with, the Gemara had discussed the question, when Edim come to testify that a woman's husband is dead, that she should be allowed to remarry, do we have to do Hakir or Drisha? Do we have to carefully cross-examine them? We do have to find out how the basic facts of how they know what they're saying, but do we have to cross-examine them in detail? So we had a machlokes about it. And we said that it actually depends on the question of do we compare it to dinim mominus or dinim nefoshes. If it's dinim mominus, we say the chachamim were makel on that, even though we're not told that you need judicial hakira in both cases, but in dinim mominus, the chachamim were makel. If it's dinim nefoshes, then the usual rule still apply. You need judicial hakira. And the Gemara finished off. Amr of Elazar and Abchanina, Tamar chachamim ma'avim shalom ba'olam, Tamar chachamim bring more peace in the world. All your children will be ones who learn the Torah of Hashem. And great will be the peace of your children. On the side it says in at the end of Brachos, and as we say in davening, this ending actually is at the end of three other Masechtas in Shas as well. It's at the end of Brachos, Nazir, and Christus. Let's do the Siyum over here, and then there's a famous sikhah, the Hadra, and that the Rebbe was Magia, in Tavshin Nun Aleph, and gave out, that explores the deeper reason behind all this. Hadra Nalacha Isha Basra, it's Likal Masech Yevamos. Actually, you know what? I guess let me say that first, I guess, and then we'll do the Hadra and the Kaddish closer to 9:30 so we can get a minion for it. So, there's four Masechtas that end with this ending. Why each one of them? So brachas, yevamos, nazir, and krisus. So in each place, in each individual place, Marsha explains the reason for it. Here he says the idea is that it's a continuation of a little bit of the previous part about whether you need drisha b'chakira or not, and more generally of the whole masechta. That throughout the masechta we have all kinds of details where we're saying that the chacham are accepting edim in a way that we wouldn't normally, and we're doing it for the sake because we want to be master agunos. There's many other things throughout the masechta where it looks like in a way the chachamim are changing something that's minat Torah. But no, the Eivishter gave the Tamar Chachamim the power to do that for the sake of Shalom. And therefore that connects with the last part about the Chachamim changing the rules as far as the Rishon HaKir by Dinim Ominous. That's Marsha. In Brachos, he gives an explanation appropriate to there. In Nazir, he gives an explanation appropriate to the Gemara there. The Aruch HaNer then gives an explanation. He said he ties the four of them a little more together. He says, if you look at it, the four Masechtas that have this ending, actually, what are we saying? The Rosh HaTevis, so the names of these four Masechtas, spell out Banayich, Brachos, Nazir, Yevamos, and Krisus. So therefore, it's appropriate. Therefore, he says it's an appropriate ending for each of them. And he explains there's four different kinds of shalom. There's shalom between a person and Hashem. There's shalom bein ish l'ishtoi, between one person and another. And he explains how in each of these four masechtas, this ending is appropriate to the type of shalom we're talking about in that masechta. The Rebbe mentions both of those in this hadron, but the Rebbe objects to both of those. In the case of Marsha's explanation, the problem with it is it's very atomistic. You have one explanation for brachos, a completely different one for yevamos, etc. What do they have in common? The fact is, you have the same ending in four different masechtas. The Aruch HaNer, okay, but we're talking about four different kinds of shalom. So the Rebbe's explanation, it's a long explanation. I'm not sure how much I can do it justice in a few minutes, but the idea is that Rebbe explains there's four different levels in Shalom itself, in the Shalom between us and the Eivishter, and between us and the Eivishter, between the world and the Eivishter, there's four different levels in it. We know from Parshas Beshalach, when the Jews were being pursued by the Mitzrayim, famous four groups that they split into, each one with each one of the different proposed response. One is we should fall into the sea. One is we should return to Mitzrayim. One is we should fight against them. One is we should cry out, meaning daven. And in the end, the Eibishter rejected all those four and said, no, just go into the Yam Suf, and then it'll split. But the Rebbe explains in the Sicha, each of them meant well. Each of them was talking a way of making Shalom that has a place in Kedusha. In particular, the one that the Rebbe relates to our Masechta, to Yevamos, is one about when they said, let's return to Mitzrayim. Now, what do they mean by that? Do they mean, let's return to Mitzrayim and let's give up on the whole Yetzias Mitzrayim? No, of course not. No, what they meant is, let's return to Mitzrayim in the sense that obviously we see that Mitzrayim still has what to offer us in Ruchnius. In that case, let's go back there and let's take that remaining Ruchnius in Mitzrayim. Obviously, they're arguing, they were arguing there must be something left there. The fact that the Mitzrayim are chasing after us. Okay, but they're arguing there's still Mitzrayim to Kedusha, but there's still resources, obviously, that we have. Obviously, the Mitzrayim are pursuing us and trying to drag us back there. Obviously, the point is that there is something of Kedusha still left over there that we have to go, and it's Hapcha, not it's Hapcha, and it's Hapcha. We have to go and transform Mitzrayim into a place of Ruchnius. And therefore, that ever relates that to Amos Echta, where you have the person who has died childless, meaning they have no kiyum beruchnius, they have no continuation in ruchnius. But what happens? You have either yibum or chalitza, either of which provide a certain continuation for them. So that relates to this kind of thing. But then we're saying that the Torah itself is saying then that you have there's looking at it sort of from a Hashem's eye view and looking at it from a human eye view. So in the dinim of Yibum and Chalitza itself, you have the human eye view to begin with. The Torah itself gives us the alternative. You do Yibum, but if the man or the woman is not willing to do Yibum, so from the Eibishter's point of view, maybe it could be done, but from their point of view, no, then there's Chalitza as an alternative. And we see the Chachamim established, we learned a few times in the Masechta, that in fact Chalitza is preferred to Yibum. In most cases, because the Mekablim nowadays are usually not capable of living up to that. So therefore, so that relates to this idea of the idea that the Mitzrayim being the Mitzrayim as the Mekabel is ready to be transformed. The Jews were arguing into a place of Ruchnius, and that's in general our job in the world is to take the world in a way to not necessarily to fight against it. That's a different group. That's Nazir. Not necessarily nipra layam, that we just go on mesiras nefesh, that's brachas. Not that we, and harmonizing them, that I've explained over there is more krisis. The Yevamos idea is the idea of itapcha, of taking the world and making it transformable into something that shows the lakos. And we see that in the last thing before this part, that the Chachamim had the power to do that, to take a din in the Torah and change it more in keeping with what the Makabel, with what we human beings are capable of, and therefore in order to encourage that people should lend each other money, and they change the rules of Jerusha v'Chakira by Dini Mominus. So each of these Masechtos ends with this idea of Tamar Chachamim Ma'avim Shalom Ba'olam, because the idea of Ma'avim Shalom that ever finishes off over there is the idea that it's not that there's one Shalom, you're bringing a Shalom into every part of the world. So Ma'avim Shalom, there's a lot of different Shalom out there, touching and then transforming every part of the world.
Need all the Shalom to be complete?
Yeah. So that's the idea of our Masechta. Ultimately, what happens, thus far the Sicha, so now, if it's possible to add our own thing on top of that, after all, the Eibishter rejected all those four things, and he told them, go into the Yam Suf, Gabra b'nei Tov Yiso, go travel ahead, and the Yam Suf will split. So, Koshin l'zabdom k'kriyas Yam Suf, the Gemara mentions, that the getting together, a husband and wife, which is now the topic of our current Masechta Ksubas, we go from Yevamos to Ksubas, is that very idea of Lazavgon, of joining together. Appropriately enough, also, it is now, the Ksubas that we're learning now is the 15th Masechta we're learning in this year. We have one Masechta of Zroim, Brachas, we have 12 of Moed, and Yevamos, and now Ksubas. Yud K is the joining of Ish and Isha, as we know the famous thing about the Ish brings in the Yud, the Isha brings in the Hay. So that's having having accomplished or having accomplished or at least learned about accomplishing the etapa of the world, transforming it into a place of kedusha. Now it's the time to work on the bein ish la ishtay and bringing in the shechina and bringing the shechina dol lamata.
Amen.
Well, one idea of it is when it came to Kriyas Yamsuf, there was a certain difficulty, Kavyachol, in the sense that the Midas Adin was arguing Manishtana Elam Elam. What after all is the difference between the Halolo Ovgabe Dezara, Halolo Ovgabe Dezara, and the Eibishter had to override that.
But nevertheless, even when
they were crossing the Yamsuf, they still had Pesel Micha. So with Kashim Lazavgam, there's also the idea that the Midas Adin might argue, you know, is he really completely worthy of her? Is she really completely worthy of him? But the Eibishter puts them together anyway.
He makes them.
The Eibishter takes the Yachid, and the Eibishter himself is the Yachid. They actually said Chassidus on that topic. But the Eibishter himself is the Yachid because he's the unique one in the world. And Baisa, we have to make a bias. The Eibishter expects us to make a house for him down here. And every time the marriage of a chos and kala, as we're going to learn on Daf Ches, when we go through the text of the Sheva Brachas, we're going to see how this idea is evoked there also in those brachas.
I did read an article by Rose that he claims that most everybody thinks that it should have been so polished. They send away the first vinegar already. Does it make sense?
No, it doesn't.
I can't make a statement like that across the board. Because what do they want today? Do you think the pipeline is so flat for 20 years?
We want to ask some people to come in here so we can basically see them and then Kaddish and then we'll have higher.
What he's trying to say is the more you want college, the more you can assimilate.
We need to leave.
I can't read so particular what you're supposed to do. I think it's money.